The Buff.
Hello and welcome to the Buff Podcast. My name's Mark Isles. I'm the chief football writer of the Bolton News. And if you didn't know already, this is your one-stop shop for all things Bolton Wanderers weekly podcast every Friday morning. And, well, I mean, I'd love to say that we had another win to talk about this week. We haven't. We've got the world's dullest game, but we haven't got the world's dullest co-host, Henry Hewitt. A good afternoon to you, sir.
Oh, good afternoon to you. It must be second dullest then.
Second dullest? Yeah, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. But you're a step up on the guy we don't like to mention anymore. Right, before we delve into the vast array of mystery that was the Grimsby Town game and look forward to this weekend's game against Oldham Athletic, let's look at what the week was like at Wanderers. After beating Harrogate in Doncaster, beating Grimsby in Bolton seemed dead easy, particularly as they'd all been stuck at home for 2 weeks watching This Morning and eating rustlers. But it wasn't easy, it got proper frustrating, so much so that instead of commentating on the football, they put on a now 7 album 10 minutes into the second half to liven things up. The problem was that Fergal Sharkey's still number one in Grimsby, so I think it made them play better. The game finished 0-0, but nobody told Twitter. And Dave1234 from Breakmut said it was the worst Bolton performance he'd seen since the last time he next six cans of Stella watching iFollow in his boxer shorts. But it was okay, because a day later we all had something else to moan about, when Manchester United and Liverpool offered to lend us all £250 million in exchange for football's soul. Apparently, EFL chairman Rick Parry had been cooking up this plan for 3 years, but he'd just forgot to tell anybody. I mean, you can say what you like about Sean Harvey. No, seriously, say what you like about him, he's completely not a w**k. Bolton quite liked the idea, in fact most clubs in the EFL quite fancied the idea of not going out of business. But in the end, it turned out that all the fans on Twitter were right and the plan was pretty much crap. The Premier League only gave League 1 and 2 £50 million, which felt a bit like when your gran sticks pound coins in your birthday card. And the Championship only got an IOU. Meanwhile at Bolton, Andy Tutt said football was weird without fans, and don't forget, he's played for Morecambe. You should try watching a game on a laptop knowing they might play Rene and Renato at any minute. Anyway, I've got to go, there's a deal on broken biscuits at Lee Market I want to stock up for deadline day. But that's what happened at Wanderers this week. And welcome back from that hilarious sojourn. I'm not sure whether that monologue's going to last, Henry.
I like him. I think it rounds it up, the week at Wanderers, quite nicely.
There is an argument to suggest that is what we are doing now, that the actual bulk of the show should really be the rounding up. But, you know, whatever. Whatever floats people's boats. We have had quite a bit of feedback about it. I'm not going to say all of it was positive, but, you know, I don't really care. Talking about not really being very positive, Grimsby Town, what did you make? Did you see the game, for starters? But did you fall asleep at any point in time?
I was drifting off in the second half, but then a bit of music woke me up. So, no, it was, considering that Grimsby Town hadn't played for 3 weeks, it was very disappointing. And disappointing that they seemed to finish the game stronger. They looked more match fit than us somehow.
Yeah, no, I agree with that one. I mean, we were going to play some hilarious clips of said song throughout the podcast, by the way, but NewsQuest would not sign it off. So, yes, we just simply haven't got the money to pay for Fergal Sharkey, which is a damn indictment in local journalism, really. But, the Grimsby game, a little bit stale. I thought the first half, I was quite happy with the first half. I thought at that point in time, had they continued at that pace and playing with that intensity, I would have said that they'd have gone and won the game. If they'd have scored, they would definitely have gone on and won the game. But the longer it went on, the more, you know, kind of rigid you saw. There was no creativity there, was there?
No, there wasn't. And I watched it with my dad and I said to him that both scores against Newport and Grimsby were 0-0 at half-time. And the difference in play from Bolton were chalk and cheese. Yeah, in the second half, we just didn't create anything. And it just... He just was in first gear. There was nothing. And again, you could tell that Owen Doyle was getting so frustrated about what was happening. And the fact that we didn't have any shots on target in the game, but I don't think we even had a shot at all in the second half. It says everything about that game, to be honest.
Yeah, I think Ian Evatt was a little bit miffed about the wing-backs and the quality of the delivery. And I have to say, during the game and even straight after the game, I was defending Jack Hickman to the hilt because I thought he'd played quite well because he was kind of the constant outlet out there, and it seemed like if Bolton were going to do anything at all, it was going to come through him. Now, we've seen the clips since and seen the highlights back, and obviously a lot of the stuff he was putting in there wasn't reaching the man. I still think we're being a bit harsh on him there, though, in the manager's post-match stuff, because I felt, you know, he's whipping a ball into decent areas there. It just seemed like if it wasn't going to hit Owen Doyle, there was nobody else in there.
No, and I think that's a problem that we've had at Bolton for years and years and years, is that there seems to be one man in the box, and at least it's not 5'8" or 5'9" Adam Lafond just trying to reach a header anymore. But I did notice that a lot of his crosses were either hitting the first man and they were going for a corner or being over hit. But I think he's at least he's making himself available. He's getting to put the crosses in, and that's a lot more than actually going on the other side of the pitch on the left hand side, because I don't remember any crosses coming in from there.
No, I don't think Maskell had much of a game, and you know, I've been quite critical of Liam Gordon at times this season as well, because he looks like a winger playing at left back. It kind of the defensive side of the game seems to be completely missing at the minute, and I mean we'll chat about it later on when we talk about the transfer window and what's left of it, but I do think that's got to be an area of concern for him, because with Gethin Jones being out, if he thinks that Hickman's a little bit raw and he isn't delivering consistently, then they're really the options are not fantastic there, are they?
No, they're not, and it's building, and it is better than what, if you think about again the game against Newport and against Forest Green actually, and compare it to that first half against Grimsby, it is a lot better. So you could argue, well, we're two unbeaten now, kept a clean sheet, and it was better than what it was. But you will see this weekend, because, I mean, we'll talk about it later on, but home against Oldham, there's a lot of pressure on them to win that game now.
There is. And I was wondering after the game where it ranked in my most dull games that I'd seen. And I think there's some provisions that have to be made for the fact that I sat here and watched it at my kitchen table with, you know, the house in self-isolation. You know, there was no beers on the go because I was on duty anyway. So it was a cup of tea watching Bolton against Grimsby on a laptop on a Saturday afternoon with no soul to the game whatsoever. I can't think of many games. Can you think of a game that's as dull?
There's quite a few that we could argue with watching Bolton, especially the last few years. I remember some of the games in the Championship when we got relegated under Phil Parkinson, and we were just, for 90 minutes, Beavers was kicking the ball up to the strikers, and it was just going out for goal kicks. But one in particular I remember, we played Blackburn in the Premier League. It was like September, the start of September. It was on Sky, so it must have been 2004, maybe 2003. Anyway, I just remember I would listen to Radio 5 Live, and I think it was Alan Green ended the game with, "Thank God that's over." So when that's the commentator's last thoughts, then that must have been a dull game as well.
Yeah, I remember a couple of bad ones at Preston. I remember one, I think it was Neil Lennon. On Halloween it was, and oh God, it was awful. It was just dreadful. And after the game, you have to walk around the pitch afterwards, and you do the interviews for some reason on like the far side of the pitch from where the gantry is, and Neil Lennon just walks up to us just shaking his head, and we're like, please say something interesting, because you're going to save us here, mate, because there's literally nothing we can say about that game that is in any way going to sell newspapers. Please say something. And I think he rescued us. But no, there's a few. I mean, I remember Gary Megson as well, when he was in charge. I think it was the first full season that he had. And it was one of my first seasons covering Bolton. And it was like the last five games of the season just seemed to be on repeat. And they were all draws, and it just really petered out. I think there was a game at Wigan, and there was another one at Sunderland. And I just seem to remember that being the most bored I'd been, being a football journalist at all at that point in time. And thinking there must be more to it than this.
You just reminded me, actually, that Wigan game, which was 0-0. That is the only game where I've actually fallen asleep in the game. Because So one of my mates from college, he goes with his like quite a few lads, and he said, "Oh, come with us. We have some drinks in Bolton first, and then we'll go into Wigan on the train." And 3 o'clock kickoff, he's starting at like 10, 11 o'clock in Wetherspoons, and it got to like 4:10, and it was quite a nice day if you remember, and I was just nodding off, and I think Wigan or Bolton hit the bar. I think that was the only thing that happened, and that's what woke me up. And yeah, but other than that, it was a dull fest.
You've just reminded me of, well, I'm hoping that there's no children's charities listening while I say this, but my son wanted to go and watch some of the Olympics when it was on, and the Old Trafford had a few games on, one which was involving Brazil. And me and a friend, his name's Wayne, we went out the night before, had far too much to drink, and then the next morning we decided to go to Old Trafford to watch the Olympic football and watch Brazil. But only we didn't realise when we turned up that there was a game on beforehand, and I think it was New Zealand versus Egypt or something equally as bizarre as that. And young my eldest, he's 14 now, but he was only 4 or 5 at the time, and we made him sit through this game. It was so dull, but both me and my mate had been out far too late, and we were falling asleep. And poor little Josh, in the middle of us both, sat there playing on a phone, I think it was at the time. I think he managed to get about halfway through. I woke up, and all of a sudden we were surrounded by Brazil fans banging samba drums and all sorts. And I'm like, "Where's my son? Where's my son?" But yeah, that was nothing, not anything to do with Wanderers, but I just thought I'd sojourn into a little personal anecdote. But there we go. Right, well, I think after exhausting all the Grimsby options, it's time for some headlines. And of course, this is the time of the week where Henry picks out three stories. It hasn't been a particularly newsy week at Wanderers, if I'm being brutally honest, but we've got a few, haven't we? Hopefully.
Well, it's been a struggle, but no. Ian Holloway was very complimentary towards the University of Bolton Stadium, saying that it's about time we got some fans in there.
That's very true. That's very true. I'd love to have said that I was sat there and talking to him, but sadly, I didn't get that pleasure. I was at home, and all the stuff got sent to me. But yes, Ollie was in good form by all accounts afterwards. He's a delight in post-match press conferences, unless you've got a deadline, because he tends to rabbit on a little bit. But he's basically saying, in a ground like the Uniball, 28,000 plus, how the hell can we not find a way of getting in a core, season ticket holders amount to just over 8,000 fans? How can we not find a way? How can we not find a way of finding even 1,000, even if there was some type of lottery to decide that, certain numbers of people can get in? How is that not possible? Especially, and I don't like the idea of continually comparing and contrasting things and saying, "Well, what about that? What about that?" It annoys me when people do it. But when you see the Albert Hall packed as it was for that Arsene Wenger thing, with 1,000 people that were not far apart at all, and then you see the way, let's say, Shrewsbury did it, the way that they packed in 1,000 with one of the test cases just before it all got turned off at the start of the month, and it seems bizarre. It seems bizarre. Then the argument is, of course, that fans turn up on public transport or fans congregate in pubs. But surely, if you're telling fans, "Listen, this is the difference between football being played with you present and not," people are going to behave themselves, surely.
Yeah, and if you think about the Uniball, it's not, if you think about the like a theatre like the Albert Hall, and even congregating in the con, like, I don't know if they call it a concourse in theatre, but even congregating there, there's not much room to move. Yet at Bolton Stadium, you could even have half the fans coming in through the corners, where the ambulance comes in, and that's a big enough sort of entrance for people to safely come in. And then you can have a few in certain designated turnstiles. So, I think 1,000 easily, but you could probably get in 8,000. That's 2,000 in every stand, and it'd be fine.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think the way, I saw some of the provisional plans for some of the bigger grounds during lockdown, It's all there. It's all mapped out. It's there's no kind of suck it and see type of thing. People have got very. I mean, I know Bolton certainly have because they were one of the grounds that were going to get used if Premier League grounds had to, you know, Premier League games had to go to a neutral venue. So the Premier League were happy enough with what Bolton had planned to be able to earmark them, and I think it was MK Dons. So it seems absolutely bizarre to think that you couldn't get. I mean, would you, as a fan, would you accept that maybe you couldn't get 8,000? Because I mean, that is possibly a bit tight. You know, if you would say, okay, you can do 2,000, would you accept like a lottery or a kind of a rota basis?
Yeah, I mean, I work some midweek evenings, so I don't have a season ticket. So I've accepted that this season I probably want to get to go and watch a match. But if I was a season ticket holder, then a lot of people have said on social media that they've paid the money just because they want to contribute to the club and help the club, and the club have obviously recognised that with some incentives for them, but. Yeah, I'm sure everyone would agree some sort of lottery, or whether they go, right, okay, well, we've got 2,000 this week, so you 2,000 come, and then next week it's you 2,000, you know, and they do it on a rota kind of basis. Sure, people would understand.
Kind of a league table for how loud they are or how good the support is, but no, it's an interesting one. I do hope they find some way, shape, or form. I'm led to believe they're going to be discussing it in Parliament on Friday, so you know, it's clearly, and I am not a massive fan of politics at all. I try not to bring it into my work or into my podcasts, but it annoys the hell out of me that when these things happen, that politicians grab them and use them as vote gainers or vote winners, you know, and then don't care about it for the rest of the existence type of thing. And at the moment, there are a few who are trying to point score, I think, with football. But I do think it needs a debate. It does need some sort of interjection, which actually probably leads us on to the next thing.
I was going to say, speaking of debates, Project Big Picture has been debated on every news outlet, every media source. Social media went mad on Sunday with it. Bolton seemed to support it. I mean, first of all, what's your thoughts on it?
I mean, honestly, the first time I heard it on Sunday afternoon, along with the rest of the people, because I had no idea at all it was going on, I just thought, hang on a minute, this is Phil Gartside's plan. What's going on? It's almost identical, barring the Rangers and Celtic bit. And, you know, I know there is a very desperate need for this funding. No question. There are a few sides, not I'm not just talking about League Two sides. Championship teams are actually probably worse off than League Two teams at the minute. But the urgency made me think there could be some aspects of it that do get pushed through. Not some of the ridiculous stuff. I mean, you know, to expect United and Liverpool and whatever it was, the nine that they'd suggested to have been given better voting powers, there is no way the Premier League are ever going to vote that in.
No.
It just wasn't ever going to happen, and they knew full well of that. But you look across the broader scope of what they were suggesting, and there were a few things that were suggested way down the list, and I think one of them is the streaming aspect of it, that I think that's what they're trying to get through. That's my own personal view on it. And Wanderers and other EFL clubs, their need is here and now. I don't think they're as bothered about down the line. So I think for the most part, clubs were just happy to say, no, we're happy to go along with it. Yes, we don't necessarily support some of the aspects of it, or we want to see more detail, but we're happy with the idea that £250 million gets put in. That solves our immediate problems. And then there's the 25% of the future earnings, which obviously improves that a lot, assuming the broadcasting deals don't go bust. But as we've seen, they've rejected it.
Yeah, so we've now got a fraction of that, as you said in your opening monologue, 50 million to be shared across League One and League Two. Is that going to be equally, or are League One going to get a bit more than League Two?
Well, I think as we're discussing that, they are outlining that to the EFL. So we won't know. We probably know this evening, I suppose. We're recording this on Thursday afternoon. So I suggest that the EFL will map this out now for the member clubs. It's not going to be. It's not going to be anything like £250 million. We know that. I think it'll just about tide everybody by. It's not all singing, all dancing, but I still think there'll be caveats. That's the bit that I want to see. I think it'll be the streaming. I think it'll be the idea of big clubs having a platform to put their own games out, and you've got to think that. In terms of the next broadcasting deal and all that goes with it, that might be a bad thing.
Yeah, I listened. I think it was on Talksport. They had an English speaking Spanish football reporter on there, and he was saying how in La Liga, because of the way they do it, which is what I guess the Premier League are wanting to do with the fact that Real Madrid and Barcelona can just sell their rights for however much they want. It's just made it a two-team league, and they actually pointed out and said Atletico Madrid got less money last year than Norwich, who finished bottom of the Premier League. Yeah. So if it's going to become like that, then you can say, no, not interested. I think from a Bolton point of view, all that money would have been great. And to be honest, I actually was a bit excited about the money because I thought, well, under our previous owner, he who shall not be named, you'd be worried all that money coming in because you wonder where it's going to go. But under our current owners, you think, actually, they'd probably use it for the club and it would be more sustainable. But, yeah, you're right. The bigger picture, it would just kill, really, what we've got in English football. And I know we've had some crazy results recently, but I don't fancy every other week Man City winning 8-0, you know, because they've spent 100 million more than the other teams.
Yeah, I mean, there's a kind of a tiny microcosm of it, I suppose, in League Two at the minute with the way that the iFollow structure works, and Bolton are getting a lot more money than anybody else because of the fan base and everything like that. But I do think there was the suggestion that the EFL bit of it was fantastic, and then the idea that the playing field could get levelled out and that some of the funding issues are going to get addressed. That's where we need to focus, and I think it may have opened people's eyes to it a bit. I hope it has. I hope it has put the discussion on the table, and that the right people are now asking the right questions at these EFL meetings. But you know, they have them every single week, and nothing has happened. You know, Rick Parry's been talking about this for 3 years. I mean, it beggars belief. I mean, he really hasn't come out of this looking great, has he? Let's face it, he's not quite in Sean Harvey territory yet, but I mean, it seems ridiculous to suggest that he's been dealing with Liverpool and United and hasn't mentioned anything to anybody else.
Well, yeah, it's you think you're right. He's going he's on the Sean Harvey to I don't know, somebody who's actually quite good at the job scale. He's going towards Sean Harvey at the moment.
Yeah, Sean Harvey exists in a outer land outside Barry Knight, I think. right, okay, let's move on from such skullduggery and see what we've got next.
So, lastly this week, and this is something that I guess that we won't know the really what happens with this until 5 o'clock tomorrow or today as this goes out. It's transfer deadline day, and Ian Everett fancies some new players.
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, by the time we go out, I think he might even have one over the line. I hope so. Anyway, we better come clean actually here, Henry, because I think we've had to press pause on this podcast to take a phone call from Ian Everett. So I have had a bit of an update. So I'm now speaking with a completely fresh set of information. I think we'll get a signing in. I believe it will be a right wing back. Which means that there's this competition for Jack Hickman, if not a replacement for Jack Hickman. And I'm going to bleep out his name, but his name is Peter Kioso. And he plays for Luton. So hopefully I don't have to bleep that out later on when I do the edit. But yeah, I mean, I think we can probably expect quite a tranquil final day on Friday. I don't think there's going to be a massive amount of business, but you really only need, you know, a couple of phone calls offering a couple of players for the appetite to get whetted. I think there is space to do so within the quota, so they could theoretically do another deal, but I think that this right wing back will be in the building by the time this podcast goes out. But I asked the other day, Henry, where people thought there should be some improvement. Does that tick your box?
Yeah, and I mean, if you've had to bleep it out, then who'd have thought Trent Alexander-Arnold playing at Bolton? But well, with Geoffrey Jones being injured, he does need to be some competition there. So I think Hickman's played really well, but if you've, you know, let's face it, he's not played really in a year, and he'll be a good player for us. But I think, you know, it, obviously Everett has identified that we need someone in there who at the moment can put crosses in and get, because I think you've got to remember that Owen Doyle is our main goal scoring threat, and if there's nothing getting the box to him, then it's pointless having him there. So if he's identified that and thought, Hickman, let's work with you, you can play in the cup competitions, but for now I just need someone who is going to get that ball in, then great.
Yeah, I think Tom White getting injured, I know it's not as bad as they first feared, but I think there's possibly enough options in there. I'd also like to think that it is at least being considered that either Ricardo Santos or Harry Brockbank might just be able to push up into one of those holding midfield roles. I would like to see it. I really would like to see it tried. I think there's enough central midfield options there just to be able to get away with it. I think if anybody is going to get added on Friday, that's where my money would be. But I think everywhere else, I know there's been some sort of discussion about, oh, we need a, you know, a target man, or we need a goalkeeper. But I think, you know, in an ideal world, probably you'd have those sort of players, but everything is restricted. It's unlikely, I think, that too many players will be going out because of the state of the non-league. We're sat here now, I think they're talking about Tier 3. Greater Manchester might be in Tier 3 by that point in time, which means that, you know, football leagues again are thinking, shall we put pause until after that's changed? So I think the uncertainty means that it's difficult to get players out at the moment. None of the youngsters are in a position where they're going to be going to football league clubs. So I think the way that it works out, I think the squad, with the addition of that right back and maybe one more, I'd be happy with that, I think.
Yeah, and the squad's growing now. It's nice to, after a few years of being stuck with players on one-year deals and the likes of Paddy Kenny and Stephen Ireland being brought in, it's nice to actually have a squad that you can look at and think, okay, you can work things out and you've got players to come in if there are injuries.
Yeah. I think it is nice. It's a bit like playing Championship Manager, isn't it? When you play, Football Manager, I'm showing my age. Football Manager, you like to have two players for each position, so you know exactly who your go-to man is straight away. And it feels a bit like that. I look down the list and I think, yeah, it's kind of him versus him, him versus him. And you know, then at least you've got half a chance of picking on form as well, because I think in the last few years, Parkinson, certainly Keith Hill, it was a case of picking your fit 11. And it would be nice to think that, you know, in a few weeks when you do get the Isgroves and the Millers back in the squad, that Ian Everett isn't faced with just basically throwing the 11 fit players out on the pitch and you know, putting square pegs in round holes and just trying to fit, that he's actually saying, right, well, this is the way we're going to play, and I'm going to put the person who is, you know, in the best form into each individual position.
Yeah, and just like Football Manager, if only we could quit the game after Saturday and forget to save it and start all over again.
Right, okay, well, that seems like it's a great time to move on to All Right or Barry Knight. And for those of you that don't know how this works, we give Henry a topic to discuss over 60 brief seconds. He has to discuss its relative merits, whether it is all right, i.e. he quite likes it, or whether or not it is Barry Knight, the Orpington official who wrecked Bolton Wanderers' playoff chances back in the day at Ipswich Town, and who shall forever be damned as a result. It's all right or Barry Knight. And this week's All Right and Barry Knight. Henry, are you ready?
Yeah.
Have you got your debating shoes on?
I have.
I don't know what they are, by the way, but yeah. Right, okay, 60 seconds on the topic of Rick Parry, go.
Oh, well, when he first came into the EFL, I was all for it. I thought, brilliant. He got the Premier League started, didn't he? He worked at Liverpool, which would be great. As it's gone on, though, there's a few things creeping in that I think maybe not be as all right as what I thought at the start. Obviously, the thing with Macclesfield hasn't gone down well, and even though it started before him, he's still been there when it's been happening. I think he's got the best intentions. However, there's probably that little side, like it's the devil and the angel on his shoulder. He's got good intentions, but he does have links to Liverpool and Man United in the Premier League. So inevitably, he will look out for those more than others. So I think Rick Parry is Barry Knight.
Rick Parry is Barry Knight.
In disguise,
indeed. Yeah, that would be one. I've not seen sight or sound of it. I'd love to speak to Barry Knight. If Barry Knight is listening to this podcast, get in touch.
I doubt he is.
It'd be lovely. It'd just be fantastic if just one day that you get a random call from Barry Knight wanting to set the record straight. Because they've got a statue of me in Ipswich, you know.
Have you ever tried to get in touch with him?
I tried through the PGMOL at one point, and he was doing assessing. He was out on the circuit doing work for them. There goes my phone again. It's determined to kill this podcast this week. But yes, Barry Knight at one stage was a referee's assessor, I think, at a Bolton game, and that's as close as it's come. I'll tell you who does listen to the podcast.
Go on.
Phil Morace.
Does he actually?
Yeah. He does. He likes to keep an eye on all things Bolton Wanderers. In fact, there's quite a few ex-players that listen to this little thing. I'm constantly getting little WhatsApps about things I've said and stuff that I don't know. But despite all this, he has still not recorded an ident for our postbag. So in my own voice, I'm going to say welcome to the Film Race postbag.
You got mail.
And, of course, the postman has delivered a few emails this week. Thank you very much for those who are getting in touch. If you want to air your views, if you want to ask a question of myself or Henry, then all you have to do is email thebuffmail, which is thebuffmail at gmail.com. And this week's email that I've selected at random from the few that we got says, Dear Mark and Henry.
Wow.
Got a name check. Got a name check. You're obviously embedding yourself in the Bolton public's consciousness. I love the podcast and listen to it on the way to work every Friday morning. I think it would be great to get some former players on for a few trips down memory lane. We've had David Wheater on, but we've not done too many with ex-players. I leave that to other podcasts, but maybe we should. Maybe we should. Now we've got some new technology, Henry. Maybe we phone one up and do a cold call. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't think Charles Sid's doing much at the moment, so he could come on. Or Kalu Fadiga, maybe get him on.
Kalu Fadiga, I've got his number. I really have got his number, yeah. There's a few weird ones on my... I've got Zoltan Harsanyi's number as well. That's one of... I think I've got one for every letter, with the exception of Q. I don't think I've got a Q.
Oh, somebody... Strange long
Quinton
deadline
Fortune date. Fortune would be there.
Quinton Fortune, yeah. He's the only cure I can think of, actually.
I'll have to try and track him down, actually. He's still about. He does a bit with BBC Radio Manchester. Right. That's my task for the week. But sorry about that, Richard from Bolton, who sent this email and has now seen me diversify into my phone contacts A to Z. So he was love the podcast, listen to on the way to work every Friday morning. Think it'd be great to get some former players on for some few trips down memory lane. We got that far. One quick question. What would be your fantasy lineup for four guests on the Buff, not including your good selves? You can have two, Henry. I'll have two.
Right, okay. I'm trying to think of who would give us the juiciest stuff. You've got to go for Big Sam. I bet Big Sam's got some stories from back in the day. Well, there's some stories come out. It was the Kevin Davis once he did that interview this week and
yes,
talks about Big, yeah, Big Sam smoking his cigar with in his dressing gown. So I'd go Big Sam. And then who else will give us some stories? Who else? I say you give me one of yours, and then I'll think of another one.
I'm going to go Eladj Diouf.
Oh yeah.
We're going to get Diouf on, and he's going to do it in English as well, not in French, which is his problem. Whenever he used to come out the dressing rooms back in the day, he'd always turn around and he'd be like a high five and everybody shaking everybody's hand. He'd be like, "Diouf, do you want to stop and do an interview for a couple of minutes?" And he'd be like, "En français, en français." And he'd be like, "No, in English." And he'd be like, "No." And it got to the stage where he actually found his own way out of the stadium, that he didn't have to go past any of the journalists. It was like the Diouf entrance or exit, rather, from the stadium. He knew every single inch of that place so that he didn't have to walk past us. But I would love to sit him down. I believe he's a politician now,
That
which
does not surprise me one
that in
bit.
itself is it just blows my mind. I
Yeah.
would love to I'd love to find out his stance on various political subjects.
Juicy on
Exactly, it'd be perfect. And also, I'd just like to wind him up about Steven Gerrard.
Oh
Go on, your turn.
yeah. Right then. Okay, so we've got Big Sam and Juicy. I'm going to keep it in that era of Bolton, and I'm going to have Stig Tofting on just because maybe not many stories about Bolton, but he just seems he'd have stories in general.
Stig Tofting, yeah. I bet you he's got some serious stories. Although I think we probably have to run legals over most of this
Yeah.
before it got aired. And then just I'm going to just bed it down with somebody who just keep the conversation flowing, I think, and just bring in Nobby Nolan,
Oh yeah.
because you need somebody to keep the chat flowing, and I think the banter would be flying between himself and Big Sam, bit of Doofy, yeah, and Stig as well played with Nobby. So yeah,
Yeah.
that would be a very good podcast. I think there'd be people would tune into that one. We wouldn't get a word in edgeways, of course, but
No.
it'd be worth it. That was a good letter. If, like I say, if you fancy emailing us and getting in touch, either click on one of my bylines, you can send it straight to me on at the Bolton News, or indeed get in touch with the Buff address we mentioned earlier. Right, final segment, the final leg of the show. Who's next? Who's going to play against Oldham? Which changes do we make? And also, I wanted to discuss about Oldham. One of the former players, David Wheater, who went over there, was it summer before last?
Yeah.
And I think he went over there having trained with Bolton and played a couple of times, and he was on the verge of getting a deal, but he kind of thought there was more security at Oldham. And God damn, just talk about frying pan and fire.
Yeah, but I feel sorry for David Wheater because he's had one hell of the last few years, hasn't he?
It's been ridiculous for him. I mean, I know he's just moved back up to Teesside. He's moved out of Bolton. He's sold his house, and I think he's planning for life up there with the family. I hope they're well, and I know they do listen to this podcast, so I hope they're okay. But yeah, he's had a hell of a time. I mean, you can see a mile off from where I'm stood what's happened. Clearly, the owner at Oldham, Mr. Lensingham, who's a man who splits opinion, let's say. Let's treat him kindly. I think he's obviously had a falling out over the pandemic and the lockdown and various pay cuts that have been made there, and he's been frozen out. And Harry Kewell, who's in charge at Oldham, doesn't look like he's able to pick him, which is a sad situation for any footballer to be in, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, especially David Wheater, who is coming to the end of his career as well. I guess you just want to play football, and not only has COVID meant that he's had half a season without playing, now it's this situation, and yeah, it's a shame because I know there are a few people who aren't David Wheater's biggest fans, but I think he'll go down as one of the cult heroes of Bolton, and we'll never forget the celebrations after the Forest game or the Peterborough game. But yeah, it's hopefully he'll get something in League Two. Or maybe I know Hartlepool are top of the league and they're up that sort of way, so maybe he could get on with them, perhaps. But you'd like to think he has a good few years now and can end his career on a high.
I think it is a shame that nothing ever got sorted as far as Bolton. When Keith Hill inquired about him, starter last year, and he just played his 30th game for Oldham, and that triggered an extra 12 months. So it kind of, it made it so that they could charge a fee. He had that little bit of extra security, so he wasn't pushing for a move either necessarily. And I just wonder if he hadn't played in that game, how it would have changed. No Wheater, we won't see Wheater on Saturday, but who will we see in a Bolton shirt? Which changes would you make to the team that drew against Grimsby?
Well, I'd bring Cafu in, who's signing for us on loan.
It was an astute signing, to be honest.
you might have to
50-year-old Cafu.
Yeah, you might have to bleep out Cafu's name if he's not been announced.
No, it's true.
I think if you know, if we bring in a right wing back and on loan, and he comes in before Saturday, if he's fit, you'd probably fancy him after what Everett said about Hickman last week. They'd probably come in and start. Other than that, I think. I wouldn't change too much. I think the defence, again, shout out to Santos. He played really well at the weekend. And I think we're in a three. It suits him because he's got people to look after him. I like Delaney and Brockbank together as well. So, I wouldn't change much. We just need someone to come in and create a bit more. What about you?
I'm interested. Would you go Maskell over Liam Gordon?
I would. I like Maskell, and I think it's just because he's got that Football League experience. And Gordon, I felt that there was something in there with him. He's not a write-off, Gordon. I do think he'll come good. But just for now, in a similar thing to Hickman, actually, is that just for now, it's probably better to play the guy who's got more Football League experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean the only one I would probably toy with changing is Ronan Darcy, and I don't necessarily think that, you know, Ali Crawford shouldn't be in the team, but I think it would be nice to see a bit more of Darcy and to at least have him making some sort of impact on the pitch. I mean, the substitutions last weekend, a lot's been said about them, but they didn't feel positive enough, and bringing Darcy onto the pitch at that point in time would have done that for me. I'd like to see somewhere that Darcy could play that isn't the number 10, you know, try him elsewhere, or I'd just like to see some way of getting him in that team.
Do you think, I know Everett's a very attacking minded coach, or well, he says he is, but do you think that part of the substitutions last week was because Grimsby were coming back into the game, and not that he panicked, but he just thought, I'd rather get a 0-0 than go for it and maybe concede?
That's a good question, really. He doesn't strike me as somebody that thinks safety first, particularly. And I felt at that point in time, midway through the half, I didn't think Grimsby were necessarily coming up top. I think they did in the last 20 minutes as a result of the substitution. So I don't think it was necessarily, oh, I can see where this is heading. I think he was just getting frustrated at the lack of quality ball that was getting in the box. And it was kind of, how can I change that? But that's where I'm kind of pointing at Ronan Darcy and saying, well, fair enough. I'd rather have had Ronan Darcy playing on that right-hand side of, you know, just something different. Just changing it around just a little bit. Yeah, it's just hard to see where he fits.
Yeah, I think Darcy is young, he's raw. I think he is prone to losing the ball. But I think the benefits of him is that he will run around, he'll put himself about, and he's good on the ball. So I'm with you. At least give him, if it's 0-0 again on Saturday with 20 minutes to go or half an hour to go, I don't think there's any harm in bringing him on.
No, definitely. Definitely. I mean, before much longer, he's going to have a lot more options. You'll have Miller, who can play either side. You've got Isgrove, who can play either side. So, you know, it won't be long before he can make those attacking options from the bench. But I think until that point in time, they're going to have to find some way of just altering the flow of things and not just necessarily replacing like for like. But who'd be a manager? But I'm with you. I don't think there'll be a mass of changes. I think he was happy enough. I spoke to him halfway through this podcast, if truth be told, and he was relatively happy with the performance. He felt it was just missing the goal that would have it would have relaxed everybody, of course it would have done, but I think it probably would have affected Grimsby as well. I think you probably would have seen a couple of goals after that had Bolton got themselves on the board. And I think if they can do that early on against Oldham, who knows? Because quite frankly, they have been pants this season.
Yeah, I listened to Radio Manchester after the games, and it seems to be the only people ringing in to stop Bolton fans moaning is Oldham fans at the moment. So they, what would you rather have? They seem to be losing every game 3-2 or 4-2. What would you rather have, that and concede loads, or be losing 1 or 2 nil, not concede as many, but it not be as entertaining game?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you've got the weird situation in League Two is that Morecambe are top and on negative goal difference.
Yeah.
As Andy Tutt said, it is a weird league. It is a weird time to be playing football. And I think everybody, and we, you know, we're sitting here, Salford City sacked a manager having gone unbeaten this week, which is crazy. So, you know, we're sitting here in a strange environment for all footballers. I don't think anybody's got it sussed. No team, even Liverpool, when we came back, they haven't looked like the title champions they were before the lockdown. So there haven't been many teams that have really gone on and impressed, and it's going to be a strange season. I can't see it being a case where Bolton suddenly flick a switch and they go on 14 games in a row, you know, winning games left, right and centre. It's going to be a war of attrition. They've not done themselves any favours with the way they've started. But I think that if they can continue to, when they're not playing as well, just not lose, I think that is, genuinely, I do think that has got to be a step forward. And it's not pretty what we saw against Grimsby, but I definitely think they would have lost that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I agree. I think if Grimsby as well created a bit more, it helped, because I don't think Billy Crellin had much to do. But yeah, I thought that. I thought if this was a better team, Bolton would have lost that game. So you've got to look at positives.
Looking at the positives. Well, we'll end on that one. And I hope Bolton Wanderers are listening. I'm accentuating the positives. right. Well, hopefully we've got a win to talk about next weekend. I am out of self-isolation as of Sunday, and I can't wait. Mrs. Isles is feeling better. She's back teaching again. And thank you very much for all the really nice, kind messages that have come in to the Buff email and to myself and on Twitter and all that kind of stuff. We very much appreciate it. Hopefully, next week, we should be talking about a win. And, two wins, because actually next week, I'll have been to Barrow as well.
Yeah, lucky you.
Lucky me, yes. Barrow Travel Lodge, I'm coming at you. right, thank you very much for tuning in. I have been Mark Isles.
And I've been Henry Hewitt.
And this has been The Buff. The Buff.